For today's podcast, I'm going to discuss the new cervical screening program with the clinical director of Cervical Check, Dr. Noreen Russell. Welcome, Dr. Noreen Russell, consultant obstetrician and gynecologist at CUMH and clinical director of Cervical Check. Thank you so much for taking time out of your really busy schedule to be with us today.
Thanks, Darren. I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. So we're going to talk about the new screening program that kind of came into effect in summer, really, because we were delayed. It was meant to come in March, but then COVID happened and now it's been operational since the summertime. So now we're doing HPV screening as opposed to cervical smear screening. Can you tell us the main differences about the program now?
Yeah, so Darren, you're absolutely right. We launched the programme on the 30th of March, but on the same day we paused community screening. So really the HPV programme was launched on the 6th of July when we reopened and started rescreening. So the reason that we've changed to HPV screening is because on the back of a HICWA, a health technology assessment in 2017, which showed that screening with primary screening with HPV is actually a better test at determining a woman's risk of developing cervical cancer than screening with cytology. So from the woman's point of view, it's actually really similar. The test is taken in the same way. GP or a practice nurse, speculum is inserted into the woman's vagina. It's still it feels exactly the same. But what happens at laboratory level is a bit different. So the first thing that happens is the sample is tested for HPV. And then if the sample tests positive for HPV, we go and we look then at the cells and look at the cytology part of things. So just to give you an idea of why would I say it's a better test, we know that for the vast majority of women going for screening, if you take 1,000 women, 980, there's nothing going on, there's nothing to find, everything is fine. But there are 20 women in that 1,000 who are at increased risk of developing cervical cancer and who have abnormal cells on their cervix. We know that with cytology, we will pick up 15 of the 20, which means we won't pick up 5 of the 20. But with HPV, we will actually pick up 18 out of the 20 of those women who have abnormal cells. And that's it's a massive improvement. So we've heard a lot in the last couple of years about false negatives and about what screening can't do. So we've reduced the chance of a false negative from 1 in 200 down to 1 in 500. So if you have a negative HPV test, that's much more reassuring to us as in the programme that it's very unlikely that your risk of cervical cancer is increased.
Yes. So about 92% of cervical cancers are caused by HPV. Is that right?
Yeah, it's right. It's at least 92%. It might be a little bit higher, but we know there are some cervical cancers which are not amenable to screening. And unfortunately, smear tests didn't pick them up. HPV screening doesn't pick them up. But thankfully, the vast majority of cervical cancers are caused by HPV. So what you have is you have this persistent HPV infection, and that just keeps on niggling at the cells and eventually makes those cells become abnormal and makes those abnormal cells over a long period of time, over 10 to 15 years, makes them turn into cancer. But that's the trigger. It's that persistent HPV infection in combination with the abnormal cells that puts you at risk of cancer.
Yes, and that's the key, because you did a really useful video on the Cervical Check website and you mentioned that it's persistent HPV that doesn't clear within a year, because most HPV infections will clear within a year. But if the HPV doesn't clear, it's going to be that trigger and that driving force to make the cells abnormal in a way. So knowing whether HPV is there or not is really critically important information. And that's now what's happening in this screening program for every test, which wouldn't have done in the last screening program.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Darren. And we've had a lot of queries where women are worried about us not looking at their cells. But we know that a lot of cervical cell changes will actually go back to normal by themselves, just with a bit of time. What the problem is if you get that double whammy of persistent HPV infection and abnormal cells, and if the HPV stays there, that prevents the cells from going back to normal and kind of prevents your body from dealing with these cells and sorting them out.
Yes, because there's a part of the cervix called the transformation zone. So cells transform there all of the time anyway. But if there isn't HPV present, then those changes are within the range of normal and will just go back to normal and they're nothing to worry about.
Exactly. And what we know is that by looking for HPV first, we reduce the chance of, I suppose, giving extra tests and performing extra tests and treatments, in fact, that aren't necessary.
Yes.
And there is always a balancing act. What we want to do is we want to prevent as many cancers as we possibly can. But we want to be really careful that we're not over-treating women and removing cervical tissue and putting them at risk of late miscarriage and preterm birth, because that would be a really bad harm. And we're trying to avoid that. And we know that by looking for HPV, that presence of HPV, that's what makes us worry about the cells.
Yes. OK. And then, as you say, if they're... this program as well results in less unnecessary interventions, so it's an all round, it's a better screening program. And they are doing this HPV screening in some other countries in the world, and it's working out really well for them, isn't it?
Yeah. So Australia has moved to HPV screening, and we know that the Australians are actually on target to be the first country in the world to eliminate cervical cancer. So
yes.
The combination of HPV vaccination for boys and girls, cervical screening with HPV, that combination, they are aiming to eradicate cervical cancer completely.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, particularly with the HPV vaccine, I see some people describing it as a cure for cancer, because the combination of screening and the vaccine, we can actually, as you say, eradicate cervical cancer. And that brings me on to a really good point. So a lot of people listening to this will have been vaccinated for HPV, and they'll have gotten the vaccine at school. And now they're messaging me and saying, OK, now that the screening program is the HPV screening program and I've been vaccinated, I don't need to go to the screening program anymore. But that's not correct, sure it's not.
No, you're absolutely right, Darren. That's, unfortunately, vaccination is not a complete protection. And if there's one message I'd really like to get out today on this podcast, is to say, even if you've been vaccinated, you still need to attend for screening. And that first screen, that screen for the 25-year-olds, that's that's probably the most important screen,
yes,
of your life.
Yeah.
Because you've no idea. No 25-year-old ever attends that screening test thinking there's going to be a problem, or thinking that, you know, she's going to be the one where we find something. But we have no idea about what your personal risk is until that screening test happens. And unfortunately, vaccination doesn't protect you completely. What we find is that the HPV, yes, it'll prevent the high-risk strains that we vaccinate against, but then other HPVs just become more of a problem and they cause the abnormal cells.
Yes. So, and that's a really important point, actually, because I still meet younger girls every week and they know about the screening program, but they're leaving it until they're 27 or 28. But that cervical screening test at age 25 is really, really important. So the HPV vaccine that's given at schools to boys and girls covers for 9 strains of HPV, but not all strains of HPV.
Exactly.
So you still must attend for the screening test. And the screening program run by Cervical Check checks for 14 strains of HPV, the 14 most high-risk strains. Yeah,
that's right. And I suppose I know at the moment it can be, it's a little bit difficult because GPs are under pressure, as you well know yourself. It can be more difficult at the moment to get a screening appointment. But what I'd love to just say to all the 25-year-olds, look, you know you're 25. Do the stuff that you can do at the moment.
Yes.
Register. Put your details onto Cervical Check website. Look at the material there, maybe watch the video.
Yes.
Just learn about the test. That'd be super if you did that in the month of January and in February.
Yes.
Book the test, even if it's 6 weeks away. Put the reminder in your phone and then it's done. And just say, right, that's me. I've looked it up. I'm ready now. I'm going to have that test. And that will be a really, really, really important thing to do, even if there's a delay in getting your appointment.
That's a really good point as well. And hpv.ie as well has some lovely information. And then I actually, of all of the patient information leaflets that I give to patients, I really ask them to read the one from Cervical Check, because there's such valuable information there. So reading about that, looking at the videos, and there's videos on Cervical Check in a number of different languages, and they're really useful. So that's really good advice. You can educate yourself, find out where you're going to go, because you don't have to go to your own GP. You can go to any GP, any surgery registered with Cervical Check. So that's a really nice piece of advice. Then moving on to the screening interval times. So they have changed as well. So the old program, it was, I can't remember the old intervals anymore, because I've learned the new ones and I'm sticking to them. So now it's every 3 years from age 25 to 30, and every 5 years from age 30 to 65, which is a little bit less than before. But this is still safe, isn't it?
Yeah. So what we found out in the health technology assessment was that if you, that younger women, because of that first screen, that screen at 25 being so important, yes, and because HPV infection is so much more common in younger women, that there was an advantage for screening younger women more frequently. And that's why that 25 to 30 age group are screened every 3 years. What we know is that if you screen negative for HPV, that's a very good predictor of you being at low risk of developing cervical cancer. So that's why the screening interval, we are able to, and this is based on the evidence from other screening programs ahead of us who are using HPV, that if you screen negative for HPV, your risk of developing cervical cancer is incredibly low. I would say at this point, though, the 5-year interval is absolutely perfect if you don't have symptoms. But it's so important to call out to any woman who has symptoms, such as bleeding after sexual intercourse, vaginal bleeding in between periods, an unusual vaginal discharge, kind of a, that's those symptoms are postmenopausal bleeding. They're really worrying, and you should speak to your GP, because that's, even if you've had a negative HPV screen, never ignore symptoms. So yes, for the well woman who's no problems, who screens HPV negative, the 5-year interval is safe, and that's what we're recommending. But it's really, really, really important that women are aware of the symptoms, that they should reach out to their GP for advice.
Because it's funny, it's actually, I still meet people who think that these symptoms are kind of a little bit normal, you know, like bleeding after intercourse, or intermenstrual bleeding between periods that isn't explained, or postmenopausal bleeding, or unusual persistent vaginal discharge. They all need to be discussed with your GP, definitely. So then moving on to what do you think about HPV testing at home?
So that's a really interesting area, Duren, and I think it's one that is going to feature in a lot of research over the next couple of years. What we know so far is that there's no approved test for self-testing with HPV. So that would be the first step. We know that it can be useful for women who find it very difficult to access healthcare and who are loath or unable for many reasons to attend a healthcare facility and get the test done. However, I will say that one of the big concerns I would have is that there is a value when your GP or the practice nurse actually looks at a woman's cervix. Yeah. I think that clinical assessment is hugely valuable, and that's missing when self-testing occurs. The other thing, I suppose, is that if the test is positive, the woman still needs to attend to have the test performed by a healthcare practitioner to get cytology, to get the cells to look at.
Yeah.
So I think it's limited. I think there may be a role for it. And there's no doubt that I would love anything that would improve our uptake. Our program, we know that around 80% of eligible women participate in cervical screening. I would love to see more women participating. I'd love to see that increase.
Yeah.
And that's why you mentioned the videos. That was one of our strategies to have videos in different languages, because there are lots of women out there who are unaware of cervical screening and the fact it's free. And I think I got a really lovely message from a colleague during the week who said, oh, you know, I've just showed that video to someone in my surgery, and she's booked in for a smear next week or screen next week. I thought, that's great. That's a success.
It was so useful. I showed the video in French to a woman who had very little English, I was trying to explain to her about HPV screening in English, and we were kind of getting there a little bit, but I could just see her eyes opened up and she started listening, and her husband was with her because he was kind of interpreting, and she was shushing him while she was listening. And then she came in and she was so prepared for the test. It was a really rewarding situation, because she didn't know about screening up to that point. And then she really trusted the program because she had heard about it in her own language. So it was just, it was so lovely. But that video is there as well for all of the English speakers listening to us as well, because I found the video really useful as well. The way you explain it is really, really clear in that video.
Oh, thanks, Darren.
I must ask you, Zell, actually, about persistent HPV. So if you get HPV, and so we haven't even said it's human papillomavirus, but if there's HPV positive and they see that, and then they check the cells, as they will do, and the cells are normal, what happens then?
So what happens then is the woman is asked to come back for another test in 12 months' time. We know that the vast majority of women will clear that HPV infection by themselves. Their immune system will clear it. And that's why we give it a 12-month interval. If the woman comes back in 12 months and it's the same scenario, still HPV positive, No matter what happens with the cells, then that's an automatic referral to colposcopy.
Yes.
Which is, there's 15 colposcopy clinics around the country. They're the, what I call the treatment arm of cervical check. So that's where you get sent on for, referred onwards if there is a suspected abnormality on your cervix. So all women who have two positive HPV tests will get referred on for a colposcopy just to make sure that their cervix looks normal under colposcopic exam.
Okay, and colposcopy is basically, it's a camera test really of the cervix. Is that how you, because that's how I'm describing it to patients. Is that an okay way to describe
it? I think it's a super way. And it's, you know, you're, what we're doing is we're looking down a camera which magnifies the cervix. Most clinics will offer women the opportunity to look at their cervix on the screen if they so wish and just see it in real life. And I think that can be really helpful. Yes. A lot of women like to just look and say, okay, that's what these people are talking about. I think it makes it a bit more just real. And we put a solution on the cervix which will make the abnormal cells look whiter than the normal cells, which look pink. And just being able to see that in real time and also seeing the size of it, like we're talking about very small areas of tissue here, very often less than a centimetre in size. And I think that reassures women that it's just, it's not as scary as when you hear about something that you can't kind of touch and it's not, it makes it more tangible, I think.
Yes, it can be an abstract idea at some, at times as well, because our cervix, we're so unaware of it, you know, most of the time it can be, to actually see it is really useful for patients. So there, if the HPV is persistent, and most people will clear it, but a question I'm commonly asked is, and it's actually, it upsets me sometimes in a way, because I feel like women are kind of blaming themselves about it. And I think, hey, you know, we're not checking men for this, but you know, that, you know, we're getting, it's, you know, that men and women get the same infection equally. But they ask me, okay, what am I going to do to clear this? I'll do whatever I have to do, you know, if it's a diet or a lifestyle measure, whatever I'll do. Actually, this is one thing you could do, actually, is stop smoking, now that I think of it. It's really important, because smoking is a risk factor for cervical cancer as well. But if you're not a smoker, is there anything that somebody who tests positive for HPV should or shouldn't do?
No, unfortunately, there's no, there's nothing really within the woman's control, except the very, very good point that you make about smoking. We know that the vast majority of women will get HPV, usually in, as a young woman, just when, at the start of kind of having intercourse.
Yes.
And we know that the vast majority of women will clear it out of their system. You're right, I think it's a big shock, even though 90% plus of people who have sex will have HPV at some time in their life. It still is a big shock, and women can be really upset by that. But it's not a, there's nothing you can do to speed up getting rid of it.
Yes.
Your immune system usually takes care of it. And if you are one, you know, unfortunate enough that you just can't clear it, you know, that's not your fault.
Yes.
That's just, that's the look of the draw. And that's where the screening comes in, and just keeping a closer eye on your cervix. And it's just, it's as simple as that. And people ask me, I'm sure they ask you as well, oh, you know, do I need to disclose this if I meet a new partner?
Yes.
No, this is not, this is not a disclosable thing. This is a normal, it is much more normal to have HPV than to not.
Yes, that is such a good point, actually. And I ask that, and people really beat themselves up about it. And how will I tell my partner? One of the first things I say is, well, you know, if you want to talk to him about it, you could say, hey, you know, did I get it from you? Look, obviously, as a joke, we all, HPV is present in 90% of the population at some point. But it's definitely not something you need to disclose to your partner or any future partner or anything like that.
I think that's really important, because there is stigma.
Yeah.
And I think anything that is stigmatized, there's a danger in stigma. So we need to destigmatize it and say, this is normal.
Yes, completely. Yes, big time. I totally agree. So it is present in 90% of the population at some point, and you're most likely to get it within your first, in your mid 20s.
Yeah.
So that's why that 25, that screening test at age 25 is really important.
Exactly. And we know that there's a lot of HPV infection before the age of 25, but it is incredibly, incredibly rare for women to get cervical cancer prior to the age of 25. But very, very likely, they're very, very likely to have HPV positivity. And that's why screening starts at 25 rather than any earlier.
Yes.
And again, we get asked that a lot. I'm sure you get asked that.
Yeah.
And what I would say to the women who are less than 25, you know, if you have unusual symptoms like postcoital bleeding, bleeding after sex, or bleeding in between periods, yes, they're really important, and do get checked out. But your risk, your need for a screening is just not there, because your chance of having a cervical cancer is incredibly low.
Yes, at a population level. So at a population level, it makes most sense to start it at age 25. Is there anything that I'm missing here, or anything that else that we need to talk about? Any important messages about the new screening programme? I think it is difficult, I think, for people to get their head around it and how it's actually better. It is a better screening programme. It does pick up more precancer cells than the old programme. That's what it's all about, actually. The screening programme is mostly about picking up precancer cells mm-hmm. that can be treated at colposcopy, which is an outpatient procedure. You know, you're awake for it. It's very straightforward. Is there anything else that we need to talk about, or anything else that you think is important for people to know or hear about?
I think it's just that reassurance that it is a better test, that as a woman, it feels exactly the same.
Yeah.
That it's a better test to screen for precancer, which is what the programme is all about. Like, the goal of cervical cancer screening is to prevent cancer. Mm. Now, sometimes in that journey, we end up diagnosing cancers, but that's not our primary goal.
Yes.
That actually, it's our primary goal is to prevent those precancer cells from ever getting to get to cancer.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think this is a better test, you know, to do that. And it is possible that things will change again in the future. Mm. We're always keeping an eye on international literature, international screening programs, to see what are other countries doing that could be implemented and could be better. Mm. But right now, this is the best test there is. I'd love it if there was a test that detected all cancers. Everything. We'd all love that.
But, you know, I mean, because I get questions as well, you know, can I do a full body scan every 6 months to check? And, you know, unfortunately, our health just doesn't work like that. And we just do have to kind of go with it and be as sensible as we can, you know. And, you know, we're lucky, really, for women, and that there is this screening program. You know, it's something that we can proactively do for our health. And as you say, the test is actually it feels the same. So from the patient point of view, it's the same. It just changes a little bit at the lab. So thank you so much for your time. I can't even begin to imagine how busy you are. And thank you so much for taking some time out of the hospital to talk to us, because it is a better program, and I really think it's important that women feel safe with it and trust the program.
Absolutely. And look, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks very much for the invitation. And I think it's that reassurance that screening is great. It's not a perfect test, but this is the best test we have at the moment.
No test is perfect. No test is perfect.
And that's it. And I think that's the bit that's, you know, really, I suppose, hard for people to get their head around, is that you can, you know, that you can do everything right, and that you will, and that you can still go for screening, and that there will still be cancers that develop, but that's less likely after this test than after the smear test.
Exactly. But that, you know, that goes for all walks of life and all cancers and all aspects and facets of health. You know, there's only so much we can do, and we just have to kind of do our best and proceed in good faith and you know, just get symptoms checked out and avail of the screening program that's available to all of us.
Yeah. So thanks very much, Dern.
Thank you so much. Lovely to chat to you. Thank you so much for listening today. I hope this was a useful conversation. For more information about cervical screening, you can check out the Cervical Check website. And for more information about HPV, you can check out hpv.ie.